You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this planet. Thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show, originating from the dusty northern outskirts of northern hell. out here in the Valley of the Sun, out here in the Phoenix, Arizona area. It is hot as blazes out here, and promises to get much, much hotter before the summer is over. Those of you joining us for the very first time, welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here, and I hope you make a habit out of it. It's a really good habit to get into, and lots of folks around the world have that habit. Folks in about 95 countries are joining us right now, and now you're here, and that makes it complete. I need to tell you that for all of you who are new listeners, we have a free weekly newsletter. It is called the K-Files e-zine, and it's absolutely free. No strings attached, really. Honest to God, no strings attached. And you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. I encourage you, if you are not subscribed already, go over to my website, which is kevinsmithshow.com. Many of you are already there, but if you're not, go to kevinsmithshow.com. Click on the button that says K-Files e-zine and subscribe. This week's edition will go out tonight after the show. You do have time right now to go subscribe. If you do subscribe, you will have gotten in just under the wire for this week's edition. Sometimes people say, well, you know, I didn't see any place on there where I could click. I didn't see any place I could subscribe. It's about that big, and it's red letters. I had one person that sent me an email saying, I keep hearing you talk about watching the show, but I went to your site. I didn't see any place to click where I could watch it. Oh, well, I guess if you click on broadband, maybe that might work. If all else fails, I think I'd click where it says video. Folks do amaze me sometimes. We have been offering Super Pack 1. It is a collection of 10 blockbuster shows. We have some more Super Packs coming out, but Super Pack 1 has been offered for, actually, it was supposed to end on Monday. But I forgot that I had authorized the promotion of Super Pack 1 in Alien Seeker News newsletter. And so because of that, I kept the offer open through this week. But it will close on Sunday night. So if you've been thinking, well, I'd like to get those 10 shows, they're on a DVD. And if you'd like to get their audio, but they're on a DVD. If you'd like to get them, you've got through Sunday night. Again, go to kevinsmithshow.com. It's only, I think, what is it, $6? Yeah, $6 and then $2 shipping and handling. And they really are blockbuster shows. The second Super Pack, P people have been asking me about. When is it coming out and what's going to be on it? Probably in another 2 or 3 weeks, we'll offer Super Pack number 2, but number 1 is going away. So if you plan on getting it, get it. My guest this evening is Robert Collins. He is the author of Exempt from Disclosure, and we're going to be talking about some heavy-hitting stuff here tonight. We'll be back right after this.
Most of the great music you hear right here on Steeleye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com.
Thousands of brave young men and women have returned from war, many of whom have suffered devastating injuries and made a supreme sacrifice for our freedom. You can help these American heroes, and you really do hold the keys to change the future in your hands. Fans for Vet is an actual organization that acquires human used vehicles by donation, motorhomes, and sometimes even boats to replace them with disabled and homeless veterans. We make necessary repairs to the vehicle. We better get handicap assistant hardware, driving controls, wheelchair ramps, and then we give these vehicles to the disabled veteran or the homeless veteran free of charge. You can change a life and show your appreciation by donating a vehicle that you no longer need to fansforvets.org. Please contact us at www.fansforvets.org. Thank you. God bless America.
10, 9.
Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring 5 of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to AlienSeekerNews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today.
Show unique in the galaxy.
Welcome to, I think, probably a real, what's going to be, promises to be, a real eye-popping interview. My guest this evening is Robert Collins. Robert Collins is the author of this book. Let me put it up here where you can see it. You can't see it. It's too dark. You can't see. At least you can see I have the book. Tell you what we'll do. Let me put an image of it up on the screen for you. This book is called Exempt from Disclosure. Exempt from Disclosure. And it's got some pretty... hairy, detailed, interesting information in it. Robert Collins is on the line with me. Robert, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Well, I'm here, Kevin, and thank you for having me.
Now, let me just double check. Can you hear better than when it was just on the telephone?
Oh, yes, you're much, much better.
Yeah. All right. Robert, let's just dive into this because... A lot of the talk shows run like 3 hours. This one is 2 hours, and so we are somewhat limited in the time we have to really get into detail. But let's just dive into this. Years ago, something like 20 years ago, maybe further back than that, but you were assigned as an analyst
at the Foreign Technology Division in Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
Right, that's the Foreign Technology Division, right. At one time, it was under what you call in the Air Force, it called Systems Command. And today, it's the NASIC, or the National Air and Space Intelligence Center. So they've changed names at least, I would say, four different times before they finally settled on NASIC.
All right. Well, now, obviously, there are things about your work that you can't tell us, but insofar as you can, describe for us what an analyst does at a place like the Foreign Technologies Division.
Well, it depends on who the analyst is, and each analyst has the different skills, and they specialize in different types of information and intelligence, and in my case, it was technical intelligence, anything related to the world of engineering and physical sciences.
Okay, so that your background then is in engineering.
It's called engineering physics.
Okay, engineering physics. And while you were there, oh, by the way, let me also say before we go any further, this is an excellent book, and I've read it twice now.
Okay.
Very well written. One of the things, folks, about this book that you're going to enjoy, at least I think you will, it's one of the things I like, is Robert provides documentation in the footnotes for virtually everything he says out of the footnotes, and it's just got lots of documentation in it, and you will enjoy that. And some of that I'll be referring to tonight. One thing that really caught my attention because of the current atmosphere of ufology. You ran into the topic of UFOs while you were there at Wright-Patterson, and we'll come back to that. But you mention, actually on page 96 of your book, you mention a list of the types of folks that sort of got under the government's skin and that they really tried to kind of discourage. And that would be, it says, there does seem to be a general dislike and distrust for some individuals within the government, of some individuals within the government, for those doing books and films about abductions.
Right, yeah, that was a comment that Jamie Shandera picked up from Raven. There seems to be a lot of political manipulation going on, and that's what that chapter tries to bring out. The government Raven acknowledged the fact that the abductions were real, at least from what they know. But then they're trying to paint a pretty picture of what's going on. Instead of, they don't like the horrid physical tampering that the aliens seem to be doing on a lot of these abductees. And so the effort was by them was to paint a very nice picture of, you know, the really kind, benevolent type aliens, which they are. I've talked to, they come off very nice and very kind, but other people have told me they have quite a mean streak in them. Some of them do, at least.
All right, I just wanted to cover that because there's a whole lot. I wanted us to touch on that because there's a whole lot of talk right now everywhere about disclosure, and I thought that in this current atmosphere of seemingly headed towards disclosure, I wondered if that's still the case.
I'm laughing a little bit because we've been through so much of this stuff. Back in 1991, Jamie Shandera, Bill Moore, and I was involved in that too, were actually in contact with a lot of government agents or contacts, and there was a real effort upon certain government people to really get this out in the open. However, they were fighting a group that was very much against disclosure and guess who won? And the whole thing just kind of, as far as I know, the biggest effort was back in 91. After 91, the whole thing just kind of flopped. They wanted to close the books and keep a lid on it, and that's what they did.
All right, well, let's go back to your days at Wright-Patton. When you first went to Wright-Patterson, when you were first assigned there, were you already interested in UFOs? Was this already a big thing with you, or is this something that began to grow as you ran into information?
No, I've always, ever since, I guess, the age of 12 years old, I've always had an interest in the subject of UFOs. I remember at that age I read a lot of books on the subject, and then I just forgot about it for probably over 20 years or so, or longer, until I got to FTD in 1983 is when I got to FTD. And then in 1985, I ran into people who actually had knowledge of this subject when I was working as an analyst, and I got the information about them from other analysts who knew them, and they knew my interest, so they introduced me to those people.
Were you ever, when you were in the military or working at these bases, were you ever pressured to forget about that subject, just walk away from it, forget it, there's nothing to it?
They couldn't really threaten me because I didn't have any what you call clearance or access to the information. I just got the information from other people who worked there, who had the clearances at one time and then retired and were living in the area. So I got the information that information from them and from other people who had contact. And then, of course, then I contacted Bill Moore about these sources I had at FTD, and then things went from there, and we set up meetings, and that's how the so-called aviary got started.
Okay, now let me just ask you about that. Now, we've all heard about the aviary. I think just about anybody that's been doing anything with UFOs has heard about the aviary. But why did you guys decide to call it that? And decide to take code names that were bird names?
Well, it back in 1986, I set up Bill Moore with some of these contacts, and I was out to TRW back in 1986, and then that's when Bill Moore showed me the Eisenhower briefing diary, the EBD, before it got released to the public. And it's that initial setup or group of people. Now, Bill Moore is the one that actually gave us bird names. He's the one that actually organized the entire group and actually scheduled and set up the meetings and got the people together. I was very much a part of setting that up too.
Okay, was there some operational reason, some operational need for that?
It was to collect information. At that time, back in the 80s, the information flow was just horrendous. Rick Doty was part of that group. He attended at least two of the meetings I was at. The information flow was just nonstop. There was a real effort by the Reagan administration to get this stuff out in the open. After Reagan left office, and as I just told you before, back in 1991, everything just kind of got shut down.
All right. Was there anything in particular that happened in 1991, any specific event or series of events that led to the closure of the disclosure effort?
Well, there was supposed to, in 1991, there was a scheduled meeting at Kenny Bunkport in Maine. And at that meeting, your Bush One was there, Walker Bush. He was there at that meeting. And at that meeting were about 12 other people, roughly 12 other people. And they had to have at least the majority of people, government officials with Bush, concur on any kind of disclosure plan. Well, going into the meeting, the impression was that they would have the necessary votes to get something through. But when the meeting actually occurred, the whole thing just got killed. Instead of having the 8 or 9 people out of the 12, they only had 4.
All right. Why? I'm a little, and I read this in the book. I went over it a couple of times in the book, but I'm a little bit confused about why there had to be this consensus of 8 or 9 people.
Because these were top-level government people, and unless you had a consensus to go forward with something, I assume they still do this in the White House when they have their cabinet meetings or their any type of special group meeting, that unless you get a majority of votes, the whole issue either gets passed or it gets killed.
All right, now this group, would this be the MJ-12 people?
Some of them might have been in the MJ-12, but we weren't given that information. We were just told that this is what happened and the reason the whole thing died in 1991.
Okay, and part of the information, I guess, that they had to decide upon about whether it was going to be disclosed or not would be information related to the reality, not just UFOs, but the reality of intelligent extraterrestrial civilizations and visitations.
Oh, sure. If they had gotten the okay, for the sake of argument, if they had gotten the okay, I was told that they were really prepared to open the doors. And they were going to give Jamie Shander, who's a media person, access to any and all types of information that they thought he needed to get the message out to the public. Of course, that never happened.
One of the stories, and I particularly like the fact that you bring up some of the big stories that we've heard, and you color in some details for us. One of them has to do with Hangar 18, and we learn from your book that it's really not Hangar 18. It's a hangar that's next to, I think it's Building 232.
Right. Right now it's flipped by, I know the name of the hangar, and I see it all the time. It sits right next to 18. But there's a story that goes with that, too, I guess, back on the... going even further back, going back to the time of Roswell in 1947, these initial bodies that were recovered at Roswell were never put in 18. That didn't happen until 1952 or 53. The ones from Roswell were actually put in the underground vaults, cryogenic vaults that were converted into holding recovered bodies that were from Roswell and other places. But the Hangar 18 is 1952 or 53, where they actually brought in a craft, dug up the floor of the hangar, put the craft in that hole they created, and then covered the floor over the top of the craft. Then they built an entryway from Building 18, it's Building 18, over to this hangar.
Yeah.
An underground building, that vaulted door that actually connects to this craft that was buried under this hangar floor.
And were you able to find out what they do with that? I mean, were they trying to back engineer it, or what's going on with that hangar?
Back in those days, they probably just kept it secure and didn't. And I'm sure there were lots of. Of course, I wasn't around back then, but they kept it secure so the engineers and scientists could go in and look at it and do exploitation on it. They've been struggling with that stuff ever since 1947, and according to the latest contacts, they're still having a tough time with the materials and the propulsion system.
This is not in your book, but it relates to what you just said. over Vietnam, and really right at the Vietnam-Cambodia border, just offshore over a small island, just several weeks ago, about 6 weeks ago or so, there was a reported UFO crash. Military, Cambodian and I guess Vietnamese military, went out looking to see what they could find, and indeed found a crash site and recovered some materials. There was a photograph of one of the, I think it was a Cambodian policeman, carrying about a 3-foot section of the stuff. I read an article later that said it had been analyzed, and it is not metal, and contains primarily biologic, they called it a biologic compound. Do you know if that in any way meshes with what we've been able to discover about the materials from which these UFOs are made?
I don't know about the case. All I can guess about that particular case is the like our technology is changing, the alien technology is changing at the same time. It's getting better just like our technology is getting better. So they may have gone and used or are using other types of material that have biological properties to them instead of the stuff that was described at Roswell.
All right. I know folks want to hear about EB1 and EB2, and I also would like for us to get into a discussion of this possible alien mandible, a picture, a couple of pictures of which you have in your book, but I don't want to spend a great deal of time on that to the exclusion of what I found to be a really, really interesting angle that involves President John F. Kennedy. So we have to take a break. When we come back from the break, we'll dive into that deep water. We'll be back, folks. Don't go away.
Morning light.
The show is The Kevin Smith Show. I am your host, Kevin Smith. My guest this evening is Robert Collins.
And, Robert, I want us to get into this a little bit deeper here because the title of the book is Exempt from Disclosure. And I want us to get around to talking about who is exempt, how is it they're exempt, and is that permanent? But first, let's deal with a couple of things that I know people are going to want to know about. EB1 and EB2, the aliens. Your book talks about them in some detail. EB1, I believe, is the one that was alive after the Roswell crash and was taken into custody as a special guest. Is that correct?
Yes, huh?
And what's the important, aside from the novelty factor that, hey, here's a little guy from another planet, what would turn out to be the importance of EB1?
It's because the, as it details it, I think it's excruciating detail in the book you have there,
mm-hmm.
He was the first live alien they ever recovered. And they wanted to grill him as much as they could. In fact, everything was, since he had no real voice box, everything was telepathic from EB1. They had to come up a way to get him to talk, and they implanted a voice box in him in 19. Either the late 40s or early 50s, I can't be sure. But they had an old Army colonel named Redlinger who lived with EB-1 from 1947 to 1952 when he died.
He was able to tell them, I think it was EB-1, what planet he came from. And what star system, or was that EB2?
No, that was EB1, and it was, of course, the Zeta Reticuli star system.
At that time, did we even know about the Zeta Reticuli star system?
Not to my knowledge. We had no knowledge of that system.
This, of course, is the star system that, or at least many people say so, Betty Hill depicted in her star map drawing that she did, and later an astronomer worked it out that it was Zeta Reticuli, if you were at Zeta Reticuli looking towards the Earth, I believe.
Right.
And at the time she drew it, we did not know about the Zeta Reticuli system.
That's true, publicly.
Yeah, publicly.
Yes, but the government knew about it ever since they were they had been debriefing EB1.
Now EB2, who is EB2?
That's the male, and he arrived in 1964 as part of that. I shouldn't mention the word SERPO because it's gotten so much flack from a lot of critics. But he was part of that SERPO exchange program, but he came in 1964 before our 12 people left in 1965.
So that project actually happened?
I ran into that project when I was at FTD back in 1985.
That's interesting. You know, I've said on the show here that although all that information has been coming out just over the past year or so, it's been hitting the internet and it blew up into a big story and all that. But you know, somewhere back around, I think it was around 1996, 97, I ran into that information on the fledgling early internet. And the story has changed a little bit from what I ran into back then, but I had it. I printed it out and had it back then. So it's not brand new information, and you ran into it in 1985.
Right.
All right. Did we learn anything significant from EB2?
Well, when EB2 arrived, he brought a copy of the Yellow Book with him in 1964, which is their history of the universe. And he updated the Yellow Book to the time to the Roswell crash in 1947. So he was able to update the book for us, but it's on a tablet kind of maybe 9 by 12 inches or 9 by 10 inches, and it's maybe an inch or inch and a half or 2 inches thick. And when you try to read it, it automatically follows your eye movement. So as you read down the page, it moves the page up. And I understand that the longest time that anybody's tried to read the Yellow Book was 22 hours. But they say it takes a lifetime to get through it.
So it's got more information in it than its size would indicate.
Well, you spend your entire career reading the Yellow Book, yeah. And then you'd have to live another 80 years. If you lived to be 80 years old, you need to live another 80 years to understand it.
There was also, if I remember correctly, a female extraterrestrial that was here.
That was EB3.
And EB1 and 2 lived on military compounds, but she did not, right?
EB1 lived in a special holding facility at Los Alamos, and EB2 was in a Dulce complex at Los Alamos, and EB3 was kind of like a liaison between her civilization and the U.S. government. She was more like an ambassador type.
And so she did not live in these secured compounds.
She lived in the Washington, D.C. area in a special safe house.
Okay. I would assume, though, that there had to be some means of her being transported around without people in Washington, D.C. seeing her.
Well, if you just put some clothes on them, people can't tell the difference. And if you're in a very metropolitan area, if you look a little weird, it won't matter.
That is true. That's very true. There are two Area 51s you mentioned, the one we all know about, and then there's another Area 51 at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Is there any significance to that?
The only significance is that we think they took the Area 51 logo or name here and that was in 1945, and just moved it out to Nevada.
All right, and in Nevada, on page 82, you make a one paragraph mention that there has been reported some activity, UFO activity, alien activity in Nevada. Would that be Indian Springs?
It would be a facility that's, I'm trying to picture this in my head, it would be southeast of Indian Springs, maybe a good 20 or 30 miles, and it's a special Air Force facility that Rick Doty was at back in 1969, that he reported that huge UFO that they had donated to us that sat in a hangar there at that special facility in 1969.
Okay, now in your book, you also have photographs of an alien mandible. Lower jawbone. What's the story on that?
It goes back to Michael Lindemann used to be very heavily in published a newsletter on this, and he's the one with Carl Day at WDTN Channel 2 here in Dayton that they interviewed Mosgrove. And Mosgrove said something to the effect that back in 1979 there was captain or a major, or both of them, came down to the dental clinic, the VA dental clinic here in Dayton, which is south of Wright-Patterson, and went to the head supervisor and asked the supervisor if he could get a copy made of what they had, and what they had was what you see there in the picture. And he took it to Mosgra, which was the dental technician who made duplicates of mandibles. And according to Mosgrove, his supervisor was very kind of hush-hush about it and said, would you copy this? And after he was all done making the copy, he said the supervisor came back and took the copy that he had made and the original mandible that was given to him by the captain and the major. And then he took the copy of the casting that Mosgrove had made to make that copy and took it and broke it up and threw it in the trash. Well, Mosgrove went over after the supervisor had left and reassembled that busted up casting of that, the original master casting of that mandible, and that's what you see in the picture. And experts that say it's neither human or animal, but they refuse to say that it might be alien.
Well, if it's not human, if it's not animal, that doesn't leave us a lot, does it?
I wouldn't think so.
All right, now I want to dive into this connection with JFK. Your book presents an angle that I've heard rumored, but you present a lot of information that I have not run across before, and that is that there is a connection between all of this UFO cover-up and the Kennedy assassination, or there may be a connection. Let's dive into that. Why do you say there is a possible connection there?
The connection is very circumstantial. It's there's been a lot of rumors as to why it took place, and the book mentions, or at least the radish sheet that came with the book, which is additional information to what's in the book, points the finger at a guy named Morales, David Morales, who worked in covert ops for the CIA, and he was part of the GM wave and ZR rifle operations, which were the assassinations on Castro, the plots to get Castro. Mongoose was part of that too. Morales' reason was that JFK refused to provide air support to the men on the beach that Morales says he trained in the invasion of Cuba. And that was Morales' reason for setting up the assassination. And according to what we know, is that he did the entire operation. His whole business was assassinations. And so they set out that plot to get Castro against JFK. UFOs could have been some other reasons for doing that, too. And there could have been many other reasons. But it's hard to know. I'm sure Morales would not have gone forward with the plot without the okay from Johnson and McCone and other people in the upper levels of government. He wouldn't have done that on his own. He had to have the okay. So those people upstairs, there may have been a UFO reason with them, but that wasn't the reason Morales gave.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to deal with that just a little bit more. And I want us to talk about a copy of a document that you've included in your book that deals with who Oswald was. It's been rumored, but it looks like it's documented. All right, we'll be back right after this, folks.
just laying there feeling so confused. The politicians play their games. Yeah, baby. This world is driving me insane.
Kevin Smith here. Do you have your Kevin Smith Show t-shirt yet?
No?
Well, let today be the day you step into the world of galactic fashion. Visit the Kevin Smith Show online store and get yours today.
Welcome back. I'm talking this evening with Robert Collins. He is the author of an exceptional book called Exempt from Disclosure. And
Robert, when we went away for break, we were just beginning to talk about this thing with Oswald. And folks, I don't know if you really can see this. Let me hold this up. Right here in this book is the copy, a copy, of a memorandum. And this memorandum is from the chief of the Secret Service to the director of Central Intelligence Agency. And it's called Figure 2. In the book, it's labeled Figure 2, Leaked Oswald Memo. This memo, Robert, from the chief of Secret Service says that Oswald had been recruited by them and trained by them for a special undercover assignment in the Soviet Union, and the particulars of the assignment he was not going to talk about in the memo, but says that he won't discuss them in the memo, but that Oswald was one of theirs. Where did this memo come from? Is it authentic?
It's called the rally memo. It's up on the website. You can get it off the website, and I've got the link, but I have to look it up. It's actually public information, but that was leaked by supposedly by an ex-FBI agent who had either retired or left the FBI. But there's three parts to that called rally memo. The first two parts agree with each other, but the third part does not match the first two parts, which is the signature block. So there's a big question, of course, amongst all the skeptics, whether this memo is real or not. The thing about leaking documents, which I think I'm very familiar with, is that in every set of documents that get leaked, there's always a bogus something or other, just to give reasonable denial or plausible denial to the whole thing. You don't have to believe it. So I think this is what the FBI guy did. He gave you two legitimate parts to the memo. And the third part is actually a memo that McCone might have signed, except it doesn't belong to those two first parts. It belongs to some other memo, which we don't have. So there's a big question as to, of course, amongst the skeptics or not, whether that document is real. I think it's real from reading a lot of government documents. I personally think it's real.
All right. If things went as your book describes, and they very well may have, Oswald ends up, and you don't say this is a fact. You offer it as a suggestion, as a theory, but he ends up working for this ZR rifle group.
He was suspected of being recruited by ZR rifle, which you can't prove because there's no paper trail on Oswald. And the only paper trail we have is that so-called leaked rally memo.
Okay.
So that is a supposition based on circumstantial evidence that he may have been recruited for ZR Rifle in the plots to get Castro. But another thing, too, with that is that he was also, according to what he told other people, he was recruited. And I think this is on old 16-millimeter film back in the early 60s, that he was recruited to look for presidential assassins. So it seems like they were setting him up to be a patsy. Meanwhile, they were telling him he was supposed to look for potential presidential assassins.
And the connection with UFOs has to do with Kennedy, President Kennedy, making a disclosure decision 10 days before he was assassinated. Is that correct?
Right. That was the tentative connection trying to be made. But as you notice in the book, he put a lot of pressure on Dulles to give him as much MJ-12 information as Dulles would let him have, even though Dulles didn't want to do that because he looked at it as being classified information, and Kennedy was putting a lot of pressure on Dulles to get that type of information. He was also talking a lot about cooperating with the Soviets on space efforts.
All right, now, you brought up MJ-12. Is that who actually controls UFO information? Is that who is actually in control of the secrets?
Up to about 1994, MJ-12 actually controlled, was the uppermost level of control out at Area 51. In fact, Tom Mack said he worked under Majestic 12. It was called Majestic 12 Operations.
And I've heard, of course, he
left the Air Force in 1994.
All right, now I have heard from guests on this show that MJ-12 under that name no longer exists, but that the organization, the committee, still does exist under a different name. What do you think?
As of 2000, that was true. They are supposedly two types of organizations that, according to this, have new designations for MJ-12. The Council of 12, supposedly, called the Special Security Alliance. And then there's the Intra-Military Cooperation Office. Special Intra-Military Cooperation Office. Very innocuous titles. You'd never guess that they were hiding anything related to UFOs.
And but they are then still in the business of keeping these secrets and deciding what's going to be secret related to the UFOs. All right, one quick question because we have a break coming. Is it true that MJ-12 was given by executive order not only permission but the mandate to keep information away from the president?
I'm hesitating because that's a very difficult question to answer. As far as we know, all the presidents from Truman to the present one, the George Bush, have been briefed on this subject. Some have been told more than others. Bill Clinton supposedly was given a tour of Los Alamos in 1994, an entire tour of the whole facility at Los Alamos. Bill Clinton, according to the story, was going to release some information in 1996. When was the Monica Lewinsky scandal? Was that 96?
Yep.
Okay. Well, that was
end of 96.
To release some information in 1996, and I understand that Henry Kissinger paid him a visit at the White House and said, "Don't do it."
All right. Henry Kissinger, so far as we know, was out of government at that time.
But he still, yes, but Henry Kissinger and Bob Gates back in the 80s were the two people standing behind us.
Who?
I was told by Jamie any number of times, and I think Bill and, in fact, is Rick Doty, all said that we were all being protected by Bob Gates and Rick and Kissinger.
So why would he, if he wanted this information out, why would he go to Clinton and say, don't do it?
Because the politics changed. As of 88, 89, the politics suddenly just changed, and all of a sudden they won. There could be a lot of reasons for the change in politics. Maybe it was because they realized how extensive the abductions were, and they had no control over them, and there may have been other reasons as well, as besides the abductions.
All right. Bob Gates is back in power. What do you think will happen with this subject?
Personally, I think nothing. I think that they're trying to maintain as tight a grip on this thing as they can possibly do.
All right. When we come back from this break, I want us to examine why would they want to keep it so quiet? What is it about this information that they want to keep it so quiet? And then what makes these people exempt from disclosure? We'll be back right after this. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com.
I will die.
Get it all. Become a member at KevinSmithShow.com.
We are back, and we're talking with Robert Collins. Robert Collins is the author of Exempt from Disclosure. The subtitle is The Black World of UFOs. It is fairly quick reading, although I have to say it is also very detailed and well-documented. And I think it's something that if you're interested in UFOs, you need this in your library.
Robert, why are they exempt from disclosure?
Kevin, before we get into that, I'd like to add something else about
sure.
the JFK assassination.
Yeah.
Make it clear that David Morales, as I mentioned before, was head of the CIA covert ops for political assassinations, which involved Castro. But he had his own reasons for wanting to get Kennedy. As I said before, he would not have gone forward without approval from Johnson, McCone, Hoover, and other higher-ups to do that. They may have had their own reasons, for personal reasons, for wanting to get Kennedy. And I think in that chapter under Angleton, UFOs, the argument is made very well that UFOs was probably one of the big driving forces for doing that. I want to be very clear on that.
And you brought this up, but as you look at the Kennedy assassination, there were many different tributaries of reasons that different groups would have had to want to see Kennedy gone. As you pointed out in the book, this is one of them, and probably a major one. All right, caller, if you'll just hang on a moment, we'll get right to you. I would like to know, why are these folks exempt, and why is this information exempt from disclosure?
It's because all the information that has ever been associated with this subject, except for the most insensitive, secret, or confidential documents just describing UFO sightings, which really aren't really secret in that sense. The top secret compartmentalized information on this subject is exempt from disclosure, and that's where the title came from.
Who exempted it?
The president. He did. The president operates above Congress and operates and does things by executive order above Congress, and he can do pretty much what he wants. And people think, well, no, that's not the case. Well, Congress cannot really control the president. He can essentially do a lot of operations in the government by just issuing an executive order.
All right. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Ryan.
Hi, Ryan.
Boy, I have so many questions in so little time, I'll try and make it very quick.
All right, you're calling from Washington?
Yes.
All right.
Could you ask Ryan to talk up? I'm having problems hearing him.
All right.
I'll make it quick. I have so many questions, it's a little time. That picture on the front of your book has been circulating around for quite some time. Do you have any new information that you can tell us about that? I mean, we can look at it, and it looks very realistic.
You're talking about the photo of the alien?
From the Chihuahua crash in Mexico. Can you tell us more information about that? And I wanted to see, can you come back on the Kevin Smith Show again?
The 1974 Chihuahua crash, Robert Dean supposedly got that picture from a Mexican policeman, back in, I'm trying to think what year that was, I think it was the early 90s, a UFO conference in Mexico City. And Robert Dean, and I've credited him with that on the book, was the one who originally posted to his website. I took that and colorized it and then reposted it and giving him credit and giving some other people credit for it. But everybody, including the MDs I've talked to, they think it's authentic, in their personal opinion.
Okay.
And they noticed the twisted neck area, scarring on the face is evidence of authenticity.
All right, Ryan, did you have another question?
Well, we are all so hungry to find out the truth, and I hope you can just come back on and have some more time to. We only have 2 hours, and I'll let the other callers get in. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Okay, Ryan, thanks for the call. The telephone number, ladies and gentlemen, the phone line, by the way, is open, and the telephone number is 1-623-581-5148. It is on your screen for those of you who are watching our internet television feed. And for those of you who are listening by radio or via internet radio, 623-581-5148. You know, you were talking about the president having powers above and beyond Congress, and a lot of people don't realize that. And part of the reason they don't realize it is they don't read their Constitution. And they don't read subsequent laws that have been passed that enhance that power. But you're right, executive order, basically, for all federal employees, an executive order is the word from the king.
Right.
It's got to be followed. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, it's Eric from Atlanta, Georgia.
Yes, Eric.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Robert. I got your book a while back, and I read it, and I just want to say it's really good.
Yeah. We can barely hear you, Eric.
Okay.
Yeah.
My question is, you mentioned about, I've seen you on TV actually mentioning this, Robert, about some underground vaults at Wright-Patterson that...
Kevin, could you pass that on to me?
Yeah. Hang on. He's still talking. Eric, okay. You're just barely there, man. You need a phone.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me now?
Well, about the same, but go ahead.
Okay. You had mentioned, Robert, about some underground vaults, underground tunnel systems below Wright-Patterson Air Force Base that house alien bodies. I was wondering if you could elaborate on that. And also talk about Rick Doty's involvement in the Paul Benowitz case. And those are my two questions.
All right. The two questions. The first question... Can you elaborate a little bit on, you talk in the book about underground vaults and tunnels and stuff at Wright-Patterson. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, that was an 11-year effort by with a lot of assistance from my civil engineering friend out there, Wright Pat, who's been there for 30 years. And he's the one that came up with the drawings. A lot of the drawings are in the book, showing structures, tunnels and things going off in nowhere. And they go off in the middle of nowhere. Excuse me. And they're closed up elevators, closed up stairwells, sealed up. All the sealing up business was done back in 1982 and 83. There's also the wiretaps that were done on our phones because of our involvement with Wright Pet. There's other things that my contact has seen, my CE contact has seen, that are classified, locked up in somebody's vault at Wright-Patterson, which actually show the underground structures. And they're right there on the underground, or the radar, underground penetrating radar, which is the same radar they use to find Saddam Hussein's underground tunnels and vaults there in Iraq.
All right,
these images are classified, by the way. They actually show the vaults themselves and when they're not supposed to be there.
Hmm. All right. So he also wants to know about...
He got his clearance revoked because of that.
He also wants to know about Rick Doty's involvement with the Paul Benowitz investigation.
Actually, they accused Rick of driving Paul crazy. I think that's the story. The story itself is in the book, a whole detailed story of what Rick did in the Benowitz and Fonzano case is in the book. He actually tried to help Paul out. But Paul, he said that when he was with Paul, and I have to back that up because I visited Paul Benowitz too later on, he seemed to be very, unstable. And I don't think you can blame Rick Doty or any other government agent for actually driving Paul Benowitz crazy or putting him in a mental institute. I think Paul did that on his own. And I could see that when I was with him. Do you want me to go on or what?
Yeah, if there's more, caller, hang on. We'll get to you in just a moment. Go ahead.
Okay. Rick tried to do his best to be a friend of Paul and took him out and met him and went to dinner with him and then had coffee with him and tried to boost his morale up so he wouldn't fall apart.
All right. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, hi, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Okay, Terry, you need a megaphone, man.
Oh, do I?
Yep. I'll crank you up as high as I can get you.
Okay. I was wondering, you got your night vision glasses yet?
Nope.
Okay. Question for you, but I got in late. I was wondering, I heard that a lot of Nixon, that Watergate break-in stuff, had to do with trying to find out about UFOs. I just wonder if he could verify that.
All right, we'll ask him. Were you able to hear that?
No.
All right. He wants to know, he said he's heard that a lot of the Watergate stuff had to do with people trying to find out about UFOs. Do you know anything about that?
No, that's the first I've ever heard that story.
Me too.
I've ever heard about Watergate being connected with anything UFO related. In fact, the only story about Watergate with Nixon, of course, is that Jackie Gleason story, and that's it.
Yeah, and that's a pretty interesting story, too.
Well, Angleton in Florida says he was there as a little boy with his father, with Nixon, and Jackie Gleason was there, so...
All right, and you're talking about James Angleton's son.
James Jr.
James Jr., okay.
Yeah, his father died. His father died about 3 or 4 years ago.
All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin, this is Don. I'll speak up good and loud so you can hear me.
All right.
Hi, Robert. Can you hear me okay?
No, he can't.
Oh, okay.
I've got you cranked as high as it will go.
Oh, okay. Must be the phone lines tonight. Anyways, I will ask my question. You can pass it on.
All right.
I would like to know what secrets are they trying to keep from who? I mean, is it us, the general public? Are they trying to protect us from something, or are they trying to protect themselves? Now, many people believe that there's more involved to this, like the oil companies trying to protect their own wealth and interest by not letting some alternative source of energy...
Okay, let me ask him. All right. Who are they trying... The secrets that they're trying to protect, who are they trying to protect them from? Are they trying to protect us from whatever's in the secrets, or are they trying to protect themselves?
Both.
What what sort of things could be in those secrets that could be harmful to us?
Well, one is the impact on religion. Of course, you know, the religious aspect of it, and the economic aspect, and the overall sanity aspect. You know, this could drive some people crazy.
Well, it's my opinion that insanity is pandemic in the United States now.
Well, that's this will be fun then. and then the other aspect is it's a threat to the powers of world government.
How would it be a threat to the powers of world government?
It's a threat to their political. There's a higher intelligence, a higher civilization or civilizations that overwhelm any world government we might have or political system we might have, and that's a threat to their power.
Hmm. All right. Let me see if Don's still with us. Don, you still with me?
Yes. Would he be referring to, like, the oil companies trying to protect their interests?
Are you referring to oil companies trying to protect their interest?
No, actually, oil companies are very interested in alternative energy sources, and they know that oil's not going to last forever too. So, and another thing, it's not the oil companies that are making they're not the reason for themselves making money. It's the speculators driving up the oil prices, which make the oil companies money. And people have been focusing on oil companies when it should be the speculators, and Congress went on leave or took vacation.
That's par.
It's got nothing. And as soon as the threat came along, the oil prices have dropped.
They have.
The speculators are getting threatened, and the oil prices are coming down. Yeah, but it's way above what it should be, and it should be down to $60, $70 a barrel.
Hard to believe, but I can remember when it was like $18 a barrel. But then I'm an old guy, you know.
Right. Well, the movie The Graduate, 50 cents a gallon. So.
Oh, yeah. All right, back to the telephone caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Ryan. I had one more question.
All right, Ryan.
When you say that it would drive some people insane, can you tell us why?
Okay, we understand. Why would it drive some people insane?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, I've seen it. I've seen it drive abductees insane. I've watched them. I've watched them literally just shake in front of me. And these people are aliens arrive in the middle of the night. Most of them are cloaked or masked or they're screening memories that keep people from seeing who they actually are. And they're scared in those situations. And then they have continual personal and emotional problems years and years later. In fact, a lot of them, their problems don't go away until they get these aliens to go away.
All right, I want to come back to that and follow that up with a question or two here in just a moment. Let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, this is Trey in Atlanta.
Hi, Trey.
Hi. Look, I want to ask a couple of quick questions, and I'll hang up and let someone else call in. The first one is in all of your research, have you ever heard anything about the Dulce base, the underground base? And the second one was, do you think that our government is worried about staying ahead of disclosure, meaning if we don't come out and disclose it ourselves, one day if they show up in mass numbers and hover for half a day and then leave, it'll be too late to pretend like we're controlled. And I'll hang up. Thanks.
All right. Were you able to hear that?
Just barely.
All right. Have you heard anything about, do you know anything about this Dulce base thing?
Dulce is, it's to me, for what I've been able to gather, is that it's an unverifiable story. It's a lot of wild rumors depicting all these bats, underground bats at Dulce with all these monstrous entities, and I cannot verify any of that. In fact, is I'm told it was disinformation.
Do you know the source of that disinformation?
The only place that would have that I know of that's been verified by numbers of different sources at Los Alamos was TA-49, and but they didn't have any of these bats or things. They just had an underground complex that was in multiple stories that dealt with this subject.
What was the source of the Dulce base rumor?
A lot of the information came from Rick, not only from Rick Doty, but Rick Doty has sources too. He has a lot of intelligence sources. A lot of them are living in the Washington D.C. area. I got a lot of details from those sources on the makeup of the Dulce complex. But it was back in 1954. It was at one time an underground nuclear weapon storage bunker. And they converted this bunker over like they converted the vaults at Wright Pat, the nitrate film vaults at Wright Pat, into something they could use to store alien artifacts.
And so, Rick Doty, are you saying that he was the source of the disinformation?
From where?
Well, you said that from what you've been able to determine, that the story about Dulce was disinformation. And
the New Mexico one. There was a New Mexico Dulce type complex in New Mexico, where the I don't know where the I'm trying to. There's a complex in New Mexico that was called the Dulce complex, but it's not the TA-49 Dulce complex.
Okay, that's confusing.
I haven't thought about it in a while, but that was back in the 90s. That was the big subject.
Yeah, Philip Schneider. Gave a big speech about that, and about there was supposed to have been a battle between our special forces and all of that. I think that's right. What he's referring to, and you're saying that's not a real thing?
That's not a real thing. I remember those stories.
Yeah. All right. We are just seconds away from going to break, so those of you who are calling in, if you will just hang on until the break is over. We'll take your calls then. My guest is Robert Collins. We are talking about the information that is in his book called Exempt from Disclosure. And we'll be back right after this break.
She was afraid of for that faded train. Our journey took us to an interesting place. She read a prayer for lovers past. We took the path to purity and truth, and we stood at the gateway of the sun with our love. Where the mountains touch the sky, whoa, whoa, night in Machu Picchu. Where the stars are in your eyes, whoa, whoa. We held each other till the morning light and made a pledge never to part. Yeah, yeah, yeah. In our warm embrace, the hate and anger filled his eyes. He held a gun pointed at my angel's face. I had to act or else she'd die. I grabbed the pistol, but the bullet pierced our hearts as one we stepped into the light. We took the path to purity.
Welcome back. Let me remind you very quickly, if you have not done so, be sure you go over to kevinsmithshow.com and subscribe to our free weekly newsletter. No strings attached. You can unsubscribe anytime you want, all right? kevinsmithshow.com, and it's called the K-Files e-zine. You'll see it there on the website. Just click that and subscribe, all right? It goes out tonight after the show, so you've got time right now to subscribe. We're talking this evening with the author, Robert Collins, the author of a book called Exempt from Disclosure.
Robert, let's go straight to the phone line. We have a caller that's been holding a little bit.
And then I've got Kevin, can I stop you before you do that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Back to this Dulcie thing. You had me going a little bit off because I've never thought about this stuff in a number of years. All these stories I was hearing back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Dulcie is a plateau, which they call a Dulcie area or Dulcie. That's a plateau in New Mexico. That is not the same thing as the Dulcie complex in TA 49.
Okay.
Okay, that's where the horror stories come from.
Yeah, they
that
come...
plateau, yeah, call that, it's a Dulcie plateau area.
All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Hello, Kevin. This is Steve from Texas. How are you doing tonight?
Doing good, Steve.
Robert, I had a question. I was wondering, you said that there was an exchange for an ET for 12 scientists, let's say. And I'm curious to know, where did they go? Did they come back? And what information did they bring with them?
All right. Were you able to hear that?
No, I sure wasn't.
All right. Steve wants to know, you mentioned about this exchange program that of late has been going by the name of SERPO. And he said he'd like to know if you know, where did they go? Our people that left here and went to the other planet, where did they go? And when did they come back, if they did come back? And what did they find? What did they find out?
I don't know. I know the reports are they left in 1965, came back in 1978. They went to the Zeta Reticuli star system, which is two stars which are separated by huge distance, something like a tenth of a light year, but it's over 100,000 miles. I mean, they are separate. They're not what you call a normal binary. They are separated by huge distances, and it takes thousands and thousands of years for these two stars to orbit around each other. So they're spread way apart, and they each have separate solar systems. The one that involves Serpo, from what I can determine through a lot of hard work and looking at all the data, is it's the fourth planet of Zeta 2, is your Serpo planet.
What did they find out?
I personally, be honest with you, I don't know what they found out. I don't believe a lot of that stuff that's up on the Serpo website. It reads like a fifth grader wrote it. It's just a lot of gibberish and nonsense all mixed up together, and some of it's true and some of it's false. But since I don't have any first-hand information, I can't determine what's really false.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm not defending that material, but just an observation. I get a lot of email from a lot of different types of people from all strata of society, and I have gotten email from PhDs that if it had not been email, if it had been snail mail, it read like it should have been written with crayons. And these guys are bona fide PhDs. One in particular is a very well-known, very respected inventor of very high-tech stuff. So, I'm not sure that literary clues really tell us much, because that's the truth. I've gotten email like that. Caller, you're live.
Well, I've read a lot of government documents, and there's a lot of fake and phony stuff out there. There's a lot of misinformation. There's a lot of disinformation. The core story dealing with Serpo reads like it's correct. The stuff about the so-called logs, the logs on Serpo.
Yeah.
They don't make any. I could go through there and tell you what's wrong with every other sentence. Why it doesn't make any sense. Why it doesn't fit together. Et cetera. You know, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't want to take the time to do that. But I know it doesn't read the way a government document should read.
Fair enough. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, I'm Andy from Philadelphia.
Okay, Andy.
First, it's an honor to speak with you, Captain Collins. I've read the book. I love it. I have a question. On Open Minds Forum, there's a thread entitled UN Insider Source A, Clay Pickering, where he supposedly is in the Navy, that's Source A, and he's mentioned a lot of information with regards to the Conformers, supposed ET, shapeshifters. Have you followed that at all? You have any information to add on that?
Okay. Were you able to hear that, Robert?
I wish I could, but so right. Far we're not having any luck here.
Yeah, I have to tell you that my phone lines are not entirely independent. From time to time, they get assistance.
Oh, okay.
He wants to know, he says, we've got this story out there about a UN meeting, and Clay Pickering is the source of that information about this UN meeting having to do with disclosure. It actually was not a UN meeting. It was a meeting at the UN having to do with disclosure. And that story contains information about Source A. And he just wondered if you have any knowledge of or any independent information about Source A or about that story.
No, I sure don't. I can't help the person. I don't have a clue about any meeting at the UN. I just feel that nothing's going to go anywhere until I'm personally predicting that it'll be something very catastrophic that'll on the level of something like 9/11 that'll really kick a few whatever. So I just don't. I've seen so many of these meetings. I've seen so many of these discussions, and I am just doubtful that anything's going to do anything.
So it's your opinion then that the manure will have to hit the ventilator before there's any movement on this?
Yeah, you got it.
Okay. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Hi, Kevin. This is Don again. I got a quick question. I'll take the answer offline. Why the alien abduction? Why are they abducting us? And is this an agreement between the aliens and the government letting the aliens abduct us?
All right. Why the alien abductions? And is there some agreement between the aliens and our government that's allowing this to happen?
It's anybody's guess what the abductions are really might be for, but we've all heard the usual arguments about getting DNA or doing cloning, or that their race is genetically weak and they need human DNA to shore up the race. We've heard all those reasons, and I guess you can pick your reason for why they do it. According to what's in the book you have there, is they love the clone, and one of these stories is they have T-Rexes and brontosauruses on board these ships. Well, I guess you can believe that.
So you can just it's sort of like the old, there's an old saying in the South, you pays your money and takes your choice.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I wouldn't pay much money for some of that. But
how many bags of manure have you found in investigating all this UFO information?
22 years of it. 22 years of finding those bags, and so I've got a lot of fertilizer.
Yeah. The thing is, and this is an important point I think we need to make, people do need to understand, just because you read something on the internet does not mean it's true. And when you read something on the internet or in a book, no matter how fantastic it sounds, it does not mean that it's not true. It's very hard to sift this stuff and get down to the kernels of truth, and yet they're in amongst all of the bags of fertilizer. There are actually some real kernels of truth in there, and you just have to sift them. Is that really a particularly difficult job, Robert?
Yes. It's a very hard job, and you have to have 2 feet on the ground. You can't be out in outer space somewhere. You need to be extremely well grounded and rational, and think in a progressive stages, where you get from one place to the next, because you know that's where the process leads. And in the process, you throw out a lot of, as you call, manure.
Mm-hmm.
You throw that stuff out, and then you hope at the end you wind up with the right pitcher.
In 22 years of doing this, have you ever chased down a story that you were, man, you thought, this is it, this is the smoking gun, and everything checked out until the later stages of the investigation, and then it all fell apart, and you knew it was not true? Have you ever had that happen?
It's been happening all along. It's just that at the end, so far at the end, it hasn't fallen apart. It falls apart as you go along.
Mm-hmm.
But then you put it back together again. Then it falls apart again. Then you stick it back together again. And at the end of this, so far it hasn't completely fallen apart. It stays together.
All right. Have you ever been surprised by anything that you were investigating?
That MJ-12 document on page, what is it, page 26.
All right, let me turn to that. I'll hold it up for the camera here. Not that they can read it, but at least they can see it. All right, page 26.
Right.
There it is.
Yeah, that document and the date of the document on there.
Yeah.
That date is the fact that they had an XCOM meeting on that date. That date is backed up by a FOIA document on the same date and with the same people.
That was a surprise to you?
That was yes, it was a big surprise. It's also in the book on JFK, which backs up an XCOM meeting on that date with those people.
All right, we have to take a break, and when we come back, we'll be on Final Approach. We'll have time for one or two more telephone calls at 1-623-581-5148, and we shall return. Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
iPod? Get K-Pods, the Kevin Smith Show podcast, and take Kevin with you everywhere. Subscribe today at kevinsmithshow.com.
Welcome back. We are on Final Approach, and that means we've got just a little bit of time left. If you've been thinking, I want to call, well, here's your chance. 1-623-581-5148. Again, 1-623-581-5148.
All right, Robert, in these last, what have we got here, about 10 minutes.
Yeah, can I inject again here?
Sure.
Okay. Back to that document on page 26.
Uh-huh.
The document here, which is the FOIA document I talked about, is labeled Top Secret Sensitive, October 24th, 1962, Executive Committee Record of Action, 10 a.m. That's exactly the information you see on that MJ-12 document. It also talks about a Dr. Reisner being present at the meeting. The language in this FOIA document reads a lot like the stuff you see in that MJ-12 document, except this FOIA document does not mention MJ-12. So I want to bring that out to you, because this is the, again, going back to government documents and how things read.
Why did that surprise you?
Because there was no corroboration, and again, these are documents that were leaked to Tim Cooper. This is a kind of a bleed-through. It talks about code word White Pebble, match sec intelligence eyes only, Project Jehovah, because there was no other confirmation, and this is the first confirmation we have of this document.
There's been a lot of speculation about the MJ-12 documents being hoaxed. Stanton Friedman says that he has examined them at length. He said he's been to the National Archives. He's done document searches. He's compared style. He's compared type, etc. And that there are some of the MJ-12 pages that he is willing to put his name on and stamp them as legit. And now you're saying that about this one, too.
Right, but the language in that FOIA document, the top secret sensitive document, is the same as the language in this MJ-12 document.
What other than the corroboration? What makes that surprising? Is it because this, for the first time, sort of gives some underpinning to the reality of MJ-12?
Well, I tell you, if you look at that one on page 26, it talks about the MJ-12 Group Technical Advisory Panel, which is the support team for MJ-12.
Yeah.
It talks about Project Jehovah. It mentions White Pebble. It talks about an alien codex that they decoded, that NSA decoded. It talks about an MJ-Eben program.
Yeah.
By the Department of Defense. There's a lot of information in that one document, and talks about all these different programs.
And then having the corroboration that the meeting did take place gives underpinning to that.
Not only that, the language in that FOIA document is very similar, although this document, it doesn't mention the MJ-12 subject. The language itself is very similar to what's in this document, the MJ-12 document.
If MJ-12 is now operating under, I think you said it's kind of split into two different names now, two different groups, they're still operating. What is the goal of keeping everything secret?
The reason is political. The goal that they want is to find a way to get into outer space and no longer use rockets. They want to put the Saturn rocket in the shuttle in the junkyard, or put them in museums. So the goal is to get something that'll get us way beyond the moon and out there in interstellar space. And if they ever successfully reverse engineer one of these craft and get them to work right without all the technical problems they have, we can do that.
All right, so you don't think that we have that type of technology available to us right now?
Well, we have, it's available, we just can't get it to work right.
Well, what I mean more specifically is you don't think that we have, for instance, propulsion systems that are anti-gravity and that can just basically hop off the Earth and head to the stars?
Well, they can, except you wouldn't get back.
Oh, that's important.
Yeah, they work, but they don't work. If they really worked, we wouldn't be spending billions on space shuttles and rockets to get to the moon and Mars.
Well, I have made the statement here on the show several times, used it as examples for other things. Anybody can take off in an airplane. It's the landing that you got to get right.
Or if you get so far out there, it just fails and you crash into some mountain.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a bad deal. That'll ruin your whole day.
Yeah, we've lost, I understand that we've lost a lot of astronauts, the secret astronaut corps out of Area 51 that flies these things. We've had a lot of pilots that have been killed because of these things not working right.
You know, we haven't done this. Robert, I'd like for you to tell everybody where to go to get your book, and also your give us your website.
The book is up on Amazon, and it's just by the title that you gave, and the website is www.ufoconspiracy. That's one word, ufoconspiracy.com. It's very easy. And if they can't find it on Amazon or have problems, just go to the Google search engine and put in the title of the book, and it will pull up the Amazon webpage for them.
All right. Where do we go from here, Robert?
Kevin, I don't know. I just answering questions and haven't had a thought about this. You mean where we're going with the interview, or where we go with this whole thing?
No, where do we go with this this whole disclosure thing? I mean, and the secrecy, and you know, are we just stuck?
Well, what do you think? I mean, what is the public? I mean, what does everybody out there think? I mean, look at Congress. What is Congress doing? Congress can't even get an energy bill passed. Congress took vacation. Congress doesn't want to do work. They want to play around. What is Bush doing? He's having too many problems. He can't even be the president.
All right, now I have a question about that. Because of executive orders, all this power was given to MJ-12 and whatever they're called now. Couldn't there be an executive order issued that says, okay, we're going to call the game, guys. It's over, and now I'm ordering you to disclose. Wouldn't that work?
Sure, but nothing ever comes easy, though, right? Nothing ever comes easy. They always make it hard. People are like that. They never make it easy. They always make it hard. And so there is an easy way to do things like this, but they're not willing to use the easy way to get there.
Mm-hmm.
It's always with a look what it took for Congress to pass a mortgage bill. I mean, it's just like they enjoy all the squabbling and pain and agony, and more concerned about the problems than they are solving them.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's been an eye-opener for us, and lots of information in your book, lots of information you gave us tonight, and it has been interesting and enjoyable, and I certainly hope that you will come back again. 2 hours is not enough time for us to get into everything that's in this book and really go deep with it, but I hope that you will come back and talk to us again and share with us some more. If you will, just stay on the line with me for a moment. All right, folks, that's not only the end of this show, it's the end of another week here at the Kevin Smith Show. It's a wrap.
until Monday. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you'd like. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.